Chapter 3, Growth Beyond Autonomy, The Self-Transforming Mind and the Birth of Elegance. Each developmental step forward brings forth greater capacities for functioning and performing in life. And, at the same time, each stage introduces defining limitations. So while growing into a new stage, an increase in freedom and possibility can often be felt. However, if you fill out or more or less leverage a stage's functional benefits as much as possible, you are likely to experience your stage's developmental constraints as a painful, confusing struggle. Just as Stacy was struggling having her sense of self and boundaries regulated by parties outside of herself, individuals who are outgrowing a self-directed, internally guided autonomy demonstrated in Keegan's self-authoring mind experience confusion, challenge, and struggle as they bump up against the core limitations of their own autonomy. Limitations of autonomy. The growth beyond autonomy as a reflection of a larger adult maturation can be found in William Perry's influential work. A well-known educational psychologist and professor at Harvard Graduate School of Education, Perry provided some of the initial pioneering research into growth stretching beyond the established autonomous conventions that many adults are intimately familiar with. His influential book, published in 1970, Forms of Intellectual and Ethical Development in the College Years, illustrated Perry's research, which influenced many of the early formulations of post-formal stages of intellectual development. These post-formal ways of thinking stretch beyond conventional autonomous forms of thinking. In the late 1970s, Michael Bisaches, professor, author, and researcher in mature adult thought, developed an impressive body of literature spanning over three decades. Published a seminal work titled Dialectical Thinking and Adult Development, operationalizing 24 forms of higher-ordered thinking available in adulthood, facilitating better measurement and further research. Also in the mid-1980s, Michael Commons and Francis Richards introduced a general stage model of development intended to unify the emerging field of post-formal psychology, which covered, in part, some post-autonomous issues. In the late 1980s and early 1990s, William Torber proposed a developmental constructive paradigm outlining growth for both individuals and organizations. Torbert's eight-stage model includes two stages demonstrating features of post-autonomous development. Herb Koplowitz provided an early synthesis of Eastern and Western perspectives on reality while formulating two post-autonomous stages of adult development. In the late 1990s, Suzanne Cook-Reuter begins to provide us with more than 16 years of research supporting two post-autonomous stages of ego development, refining and building on Jane Lovinger's developmental model. Finally, Terry O'Fallon continues research in the further reaches of adult development. Her current study, the Edge of Consciousness Research Project, explores Cook-Reuter's highest stages of development to uncover further clarity and insight into these stages and to document any further emergent stages of development yet to be studied. This brief overview over the past 40 years is important as we are about to embark in a territory where the vast majority of adults have never ventured. These notable examples all led evidence for the limitations and inherent weaknesses in autonomy and the larger developmental capacities in adulthood. While many of these grounding theorists propose different variations, insights, and instruments for testing higher stages of adult development, one consistent pattern can be found. The conventional autonomous stage of adult development, often presumed to be the terminus of adult capacities, was in fact limited, Furthermore, there were indeed individuals who were accessing larger, more complex, and less understood forms of cognition, meaning-making, and self-identity. Keegan's self-transforming mind often emerges in response to the pain points inherent in self-authoring minds' highly differentiated autonomy. While this is certainly not always the case, it is common. Some transformations of mind appear to spontaneously show up, bringing with them profoundly relieving, ecstatic, and enlivening experiences. However, these immensely pleasurable facets of growth are often couched in the loss of a self that once held meaning, worldview, and purpose together in a coherent way. This structural and systematic loss of orientation inside the mind is often painful, confusing, and layered with anxiety. One of the gifts of developmental research is that we can begin to see the patterns showing up that are largely, if not entirely, invisible to the self-making developmental transitions. These patterns can be useful guideposts as human beings traverse the abyss of unknown open space and larger undiscovered possibilities. And as I teach my students who are seriously interested in growth, intentionally picking up more developmentally advanced struggles is a more powerful way to accelerate the growth of your mind. Central struggles. Loneliness. One easily accessed limitation found in individuals living from the self-authoring mind is the felt experience of loneliness. This pronounced aloneness, often born from years of hard-earned self-sufficient autonomy, stands in contrast to the socialized mind's challenge of not quite being able to get enough space from others so that he or she can inhabit his or her emerging, internally directing identity. One feels constantly pulled on and pressed on by others, while the highly differentiated autonomous individual often feels somewhat untouchable. This stems from knowing all too well the challenges of being overly influenced and connected to others. Yet inside the defense of inner authored identity is a profound yearning for a new way to make intimate contact with others and perhaps everything in life. Individuals outgrowing the self-authoring identity often exhibit a different flavor of loneliness than earlier stages. For example, the socialized mind often shapes individuals to experience loneliness when they are alone and missing the defining authority and holding context that others provide. Another form of loneliness can be found in the individual who is just beginning to grow into his or her socialized mind. Here, a desire to fit in, connect, and belong to a group is coupled with immature and underpracticed social skills. Not quite yet knowing how to belong to a group often creates experiences of being alone. Loneliness, as an individual outgrowing the self-authoring stage, is not a function of needing someone to help define and regulate you. Nor is this loneliness rooted in lacking the social skills necessary to participate in the group. Self-authoring individuals are, by and large, self-governing and often quite socially savvy. Yet loneliness persists, even while in close contact with others. This loneliness is a simple, pervasive consequence of consolidating an identity around being separate and autonomous. Feeling this texture of loneliness is not a symptom that something is necessarily wrong. Just as Stacy should have been struggling with her boundaries in her intimate relationship, adults outgrowing the self-authoring mind should likely be encountering their own self-generated loneliness, and they are wise to struggle with this loneliness if they are interested in their future growth. This struggle is a demonstration of further development, not a pathology to be relieved or in some way reintegrated. This is an often misunderstood point in coaching and therapeutic practices that only a rare few practitioners who have themselves sufficiently outgrown the self-authoring mind stage are able to see as a clear object in their awareness. As a result, loneliness is often worked with from earlier stages of development, all attempting to resolve the experience with greater social and relational contact that is governed by less complex forms of meaning-making and social functioning. This often stunts the growth process, leaving many adults, research suggests 6 to 7% of adults, lingering in the conventions of adulthood for decades longer than they sincerely desire, as the honors track of adult development eludes them and their well-intended coaches and therapists. Loneliness is a fuel for greater contact and intimacy. However, how this larger relatedness emerges is entirely invisible and unseen to earlier, less complex stages. To understand and genuinely leverage this loneliness for growth, we must not only engage relatedness in new ways, but we are required to shed the autonomous self and inhabit an entirely novel construction of self. Loneliness is a fuel or dissonance that can be a powerful core process for outgrowing the constraints of autonomy. The refusal of wholeness. One of the central features research has discovered about the self-transforming mind is these individuals are suspicious of wholeness and distinctness. In fact, it is common for these people to refuse to see anyone, themselves included, as a distinct, whole, and complete self. The differentiated self-guiding autonomy, once the prized seat of their developmental achievements and subjective home for what was likely decades, has become a new object in awareness. And this new object is often colored with a healthy suspicion because this less complex construction of self can find subjectivity and identity in its autonomous grips for what many come to see as the vast majority of their adulthood. People growing in the self-transforming mind often do not want to get stuck in their earlier, less integrative selves. The self-authoring mind's distinctness, once an unmediated default that defined the self's subjectivity, can now be held as an object. This means the individual in the self-transforming mind can now pick up and put down his or her inner guided autonomy. This fluidly involved, a picking up and putting down autonomy, is a function of stable maturity exhibited in this stage of mental complexity. However, as individuals are initially grown in the self-transforming mind, they often keep a safe distance from these recently outgrown facets of their subjectivity. Thus, they are at the beginning hesitant to pick up their highly differentiated, separate, and distinct autonomy, for there is often a risk of falling back into a collusion with the self-authoring mind's now more limited meaning-making, worldview, and way of being in the world. As such, the suspicion of their own and others' wholeness and distinctness facilitates the differentiation from an earlier identity and the reinforcement of the new one. As Keegan illustrates, individuals growing beyond autonomy and into the self-transforming mind are also proud of precisely this suspicion. To give an example of this refusal of wholeness, let us consider the popularity of the Enneagram personality typology. A man functioning from the self-authoring mind who encounters this classification system may enjoy identifying with one of the 9 types. He may say to himself and his friend over lunch, "I'm a 7. He enjoys identifying with the distinct and separate number that most speaks to him. And in this case, his current best estimate that he's an enthusiast. Unlike individuals in the socialized mind, he is not spending his money consulting with Enneagram experts to find out his type, nor is he taking an online quiz, both forms of external authority. Instead, he is studying the model rigorously, and he is making a decision as to his type based on his inner authority. This all feels quite good to him. In contrast, his self, who he is in conversation with, is a woman growing into the self-transforming mind. She may be having an allergic reaction of sorts to the concept of identifying as a single type. The idea of simplifying herself into a singularity is a frightening idea for her. She may even feel some panic around identifying just as one number. Her investigation of the Enneagram leaves her with the following position she articulates with her friend over lunch. Sometimes I may present as a type 6, while other times I have a preference and tendency to act, think, and feel as a 2, 8, and a 9. You would not believe how I can get into a 9 dynamic with my partner. Ultimately, though, I can relate to all 9 types as they all have legitimate life in me. Depending on the situation, different characteristic roles emerge. She is unwilling to identify as a singularity for herself. Similarly, when her friend is telling her that she is a 7, she is unwilling to simply classify him as a 7. Just as she will orient toward her own larger complexity, she will do the same with her friend. She refuses to collapse complexity into a simplified wholeness. One important distinction to note here is that development does progressively or incrementally create larger, more integrative wholes. One stage's subjectivity transcends the prior stages in a larger inclusive coordination that itself is a larger whole. This innate wholeness of development is not the wholeness that is refused and skeptically held at a distance as the self-transforming mind is psychologically grown into. Instead, the larger functional wholeness is the self-transforming mind itself. This wholeness is being identified with and thus included, yet the larger developmental wholeness of the self-transforming mind is now refusing to limit itself as only being the wholeness indicative in the self-governing autonomy found in the self-authoring stage. As it turns out, development is an ongoing process where prior stages' wholeness is rejected, refused, and denied in service of the next stage's larger, more novel whole. For example, wholeness in the socialized mind is often attempted to be achieved interpersonally. One of the most vivid examples I use in the classroom is found in the movie Jerry Maguire. Tom Cruise, playing the lead character, confesses his love to the woman he so desperately desires. His personal love life and his now shaky professional life are both intertwined with his lover, Dorothy. In his passionate confession in Dorothy's living room, he now states a famous line, "You complete me." This is precisely the wholeness that is sought after in the socialized mind. As I share this example, my classrooms almost always have a similar thematic response. The vast majority of my students make repulsive sounds as they distance themselves from precisely the kinds of relationships they were trying to cultivate just a short time ago. Underneath the disgust, there is a quiet, unspoken longing saying something to the effect, "That would be nice if it worked." As many of my undergraduate students are traversing from their socialized minds into their self-authoring minds, this response makes sense. They no longer trust trying to create the perfect pairing with their romantic partners. Similarly, many have already learned that getting in their preferred school, making an athletic team, getting a particular job, all as a means of attaining some larger sense of wholeness, does not work. For many of these same underlying dynamics, the emerging interdependent and differentiated functioning of the self-transforming mind no longer trusts the self-directed identity and functioning rooted in the now presumed whole and autonomous self, creating a self-sufficient identity that is separate, distinct, and complete is no longer trusted. This newly outgrown way of establishing who you are is no longer tenable. Self-sufficient autonomy just does not entirely work. The opposition inside polarity. One of the major underlying processes governing the formation of identity, culminating in the self-authoring mind, is the opposition inside of polarities. To define the self, you prefer one side of a polarity while simultaneously opposing the other side. You get to author, choose, and direct which side of a polarity you identify with and, consequently, what side you are in conflict with. Are you conservative or liberal? Are you masculine or feminine? Do you move toward challenge or away from it? Do you trust or mistrust? Do you prefer connectedness or separateness? Do you privilege external objective achievements or internal subjective achievements? At the height of the self-authoring mind's autonomy, individuals are either establishing or working fiercely to establish what appears to them to be a whole, distinct, and complete self. This self is positively identified with one constellation of polarities, while simultaneously not identifying with the opposing qualities, attributes, and/or functions. At this core, the opposition inside of polarity is some expression of, I am this and not that. For the individual functioning in the self-authoring mind, the self is distinctly inside of a broad spectrum of polarities. This is another facet of the location of the autonomous self. It is the location of the self inside of the polarity that creates tension and struggle in the individual who is emerging in the self-transforming mind. Being inside of polarities and being in a habituated conflict or struggle with one side no longer fits the emerging complexity of mind that is underway. Developmental research shows an interesting characteristic in people living in the honors curriculum of adult development. Instead of only being inside of polarities, and thus in conflict with half of experience, we find individuals who are also able to be friendly to opposites. They are open to contradiction. This is a dramatic shift in identity from one that organizes around one pole inside of a polarity to an identity that embraces, holds, and is friendly toward polarities. Instead of being disturbed by contradictory positions, unresolvable tensions, and oppositional agendas, the self-transforming mind is spacious enough that a kind, welcoming embrace is not only possible, but a defining feature of the self-transforming mind. As an example, a man functioning from the self-transforming mind would not answer the question, "Are you a liberal or a conservative?" in a simple either-or fashion. No longer does he perceive himself as being one and not the other. The self-transforming mind does not collapse identity around being one while those other people are the other. In contrast, his more developed self sees how he can be liberal in some cases and conservative in others. Furthermore, he also sees how he can participate with both ideologies in the moment. As he peers into his complexity, he feels the unresolvability between these two positions inside of himself, and he notices how many of his thoughts and feelings are conservative, but ultimately, in this present situation, his actions and moral understanding appear to be more liberal in orientation. The birthplace of elegance, interpenetrating subjectivity. Robert Keegan calls the subjectivity found in the self-transforming mind interpenetrability of self systems and the interpenetration of self and other. With my clients, I call this the interpenetrating self. Although I am curious to watch for my clients to begin to construct and interpret a distinct and separate self that is then interpenetrable, which commonly happens. This stage of development does not reside in a self that is then interpenetrable. Please note the presupposition that the self is first and is then somehow being interpenetrable or doing interpenetrability. This is more of the way the self-authoring mind likes to make sense of a landscape and complexity it cannot quite grasp. The interpenetrating self has a significant shift in orientation around the self and its formation. Earlier stages generally do not have insight into how the self takes form moment to moment. For example, a man in the self-authoring mind stage makes sense of his formation of himself over time through accomplishing projects, gaining more experience, completing trainings, and perhaps furthering his education. In doing so, he shapes his sense of self over time. What he is unable to experience is how he is being co-created by a vast network of relationships in and as the immediacy of any given moment. Yes, his autonomous directionality and intention has tremendous impact on the form of who he is. However, so are the immensely complex, interpenetrating relationships in flux as the texture and momentum of this and every moment. In the self-authoring mind, this facet of experience is invisible to our gentleman. While it is invisible to him, it is not to suggest that it does not influence him. Quite the contrary, he is changed, shaped, and governed by forces he cannot yet see. However, when he grows out of his consolidated autonomy, he will start to experience this territory of relational flux and interpenetrability. And with it, a new world will be revealed to him. The primacy of relational flux. Recently, I was leading a section of a large annual conference through the developmental transition you are exploring right now. Most of the people in the room would have likely tested stably accessing the self-authoring mind stage, with some unfinished threads occasionally drawing them back into earlier socialized minds. A much smaller group of people in the room probably would have tested as individuals who were outgrowing the self-authoring stage, yet had not found stable access to the self-transforming mind. I began by asking people to raise their hands if they feel their self preceded this moment. Everyone in the room raised their hand. The self was perceived to be prior to the immediacy of the moment. I continue. Good. This is exactly the assumption we are going to work with this evening. It is partially true that you do indeed precede this moment. You, in part, are prior to this immediacy. You appear to be somehow separate and distinct from right now. Thus, you experience that you and your separateness are now entering into this moment, and now this one, correct? just about everybody is nodding their heads yes. Your next developmental leap forward is a step beyond the primacy of the self. The energy in the room gets still, quiet alertness settles through the room, and I sense we are resting in a pregnant space for the growth of mind. What we find in the research into this stage of development is that the primacy of self shifts from subject to object. No longer is the self in its distinctness experienced as that which precedes immediacy. What emerges next is the experience of the primacy of interpenetrating relatedness. Your larger maturity is rooted in the growth, refinement, and development of your nervous system such that you become plugged into immediacy. And out of this relational flux, the self discovers itself. People were stretched. Some had light bulbs turn on as new insight flowed into clarity, and puzzled and inquisitive looks shaped many of the faces in the room, while a sense of delight and relief softened the faces and body postures of others. The conference was an event dedicated to evolving spiritual practices for integrated development. I continued to discuss how injunctions to mediate, plan, prepare, self-regulate, and so on, rooted in the presumption of the primacy of self, were all unable to elicit the further developmental growth many were hungry for. Sure, interesting states of consciousness and emotive exercises could be experienced. However, they all largely failed to elicit a shift beyond the primacy of the self. This was simply because probably 99% of all spiritual practice injunctions and self-development exercises are embedded in the primacy of the self. Thus, they are largely impotent to facilitate growth beyond the separate, distinct, autonomous identity. Instead, injunctions stemming from a presumed primacy of selfhood often reinforce and further entrench autonomous functioning instead of frustrating it in service of the next developmental move into the self-transforming mind's interpenetrating self. Keegan discusses this difference as whether the self identifies with the self as form, as found in the self-authoring mind, or the self identifies with the process of form creation. One is subjectively fused with the form of the separate self, while the other can experience the formation of selfhood arising out of a larger relatedness to a broader social, cultural, psychological, and physiological contexts. The all-important question is, do you take the self as form, as subject, or do you hold it as an object? Being identified with the self as form often establishes the basis for the experience of being independent and self-authoring in encounters. Having the self as form as an object in your experience frees up greater subjective flexibility so that the self now discovers itself being transformed by and through encounters. Thus we find Keegan's label for this stage, the self-transforming mind. The self is transformed, changed, and influenced by its larger relational immediacy, which includes, but is no longer limited to, the history of the separate and distinct self. The interpenetrating self is the holding environment for human elegance. Elegance is a more direct, nuanced, and proficient way of being and functioning in your life. Elegance is a simple yet ingenious expression of you. In order for elegance to even have a chance of coming into form, it requires the dramatic reorientation we have been discussing. You, as a separate and distinct self, that wants to then create something elegant and or perhaps be elegant, is often clumsy and unskillful because of its lack of connection with the immediacy of the present moment's larger relational flux. Elegance is elegant most directly because its intelligence is sourced from the larger relational interpenetrability responsible for more open information flow and greater dynamic responsiveness. The intimacy of elegance. In Keegan's first book, The Evolving Self, he highlights how the self-transforming mind stage creates a culture of intimacy. This refinement of intimacy is born from this stage's greater ability for relating with immediacy more directly and consciously. Instead of only presupposing a self that is distinct from this moment, we find a self that can discover its truth and identity in response to and in relationship with an ongoing interpenetrating experiential flux. This capacity for co-creative discovery yields much more contact with the present moment. This larger intimacy informs a self that is more flexible, dynamic, responsive, and open to a broader ongoing information flow. As a result, the relationship to boundaries is reorganized so that personal boundaries can be discovered and mediated in the present moment. The individual functioning in the self-authoring mind creates fixed concepts about boundaries and expectations he or she is clear about, which are then imposed on the present situation and carried forth for the foreseeable future. This supports the separate, distinct, and whole autonomy, supporting the less attuned, less functional self found in the self-authoring mind. It is not that the individual functioning from the self-transforming mind does not have formulated positions that clarify boundaries. Instead, these often well-thought-through positions are no longer exclusively identified with, thus they no longer govern the self and his or her various relationships. Pre-existing boundaries now serve a subservient role to a larger consideration that is embedded in the arising experiential flux inherent in immediacy. The immersion in and as the ongoing relational flux of moment-to-moment experience, when coupled with a self that is actually friendly to opposites, creates a grounded, wakeful presence and intelligence. As such, individuals with these facilities of mind do not habitually leap into organizing themselves against one side of a polarity prematurely. To do often results in a de-evolution of mind. In contrast, individuals in the self-transforming mind have a much larger capacity for self-regulation, discernment, and tolerance for what we may call experiential intensity. What used to be defended against as an assault on the integrity of autonomy is now often experienced as a creative exploration, one that is a rich context for the further transformation of the self. It is here in the co-creative discovery that boundaries arise when needed, and they fluidly dissolve when not required. Fixed positions and the boundaries that support them come into form as a function of exploration and discovery. The self-authoring mind, in contrast, defends a more solid, fixed, inner-valued position the self is identified with. The individual in the self-transforming mind can create, defend, and maintain a pronounced and nuanced boundary. However, Her added development enables her to also readily drop the boundary in order to explore her experience with greater experiential intensity. This is due to at least two factors. First, she no longer needs to rigidly defend against an entirely foreign and alien other, because she is capable of embracing, welcoming, and being kind to polarities. Secondly, her larger maturity enables her to metabolize experiences that might have overwhelmed a less developed mind. The result of dynamic, fluid boundaries, coupled with subjectivity that is more unmediated, and in contrast with the relational flux of immediacy, is an intimacy and connectedness that can soothe and nourish the loneliness often experienced by individuals outgrowing their autonomy. Contact with one's own inner, cultural, and relational life, as well as the surrounding social and physical environments, is increased dramatically. Thus, the ongoing and persistent desire for more intimacy exhibited in the self-authoring mind's autonomous functioning softens and relaxes. The larger relational flux can be thought of as an intimacy with all facets of experience, nourishing subjectivity in new ways. Attunement, conflict, and creativity. Attunement can also function on a new level. Instead of only relying on the self-placing attention onto some person or system through effort, the larger relational flux can now also be sourced by the self-transforming mind, enabling you to be immensely attuned to what is happening within the experiential field that is co-creating you. One way it can be useful to think about this is to soften, open, and relax into immediacy that is merging with tremendous amounts of information. While functioning in your life, billions of data points are almost always flowing through your nervous system. Thus, attunement is less a matter of focusing on one part of experience to then get attuned to it. Relax and surrender to the immediacy that is already doing, working, informing, and shaping you. Inherent in this larger information flow is a more natural, less mediated attuning process. Individuals in the self-transforming mind thus enjoy and can leverage greater attunement and resonance because of the interpenetrating self. Another defining feature Keegan identifies in the self-transforming mind is how individuals relate to conflict. Your greater developmental capacities resides in a larger trust of conflict. The self-authoring mind's autonomy and the socialized mind's need for sameness between self and other both lack this larger trusting relationship with conflict. With the self-authoring mind, conflict is experienced as a personal challenge to find workable resolutions for both sides of the conflict. Individuals functioning from this stage will work diligently to resolve conflict. The socialized mind, in contrast, is not challenged but instead threatened by conflict. This less resourced self needs greater social coherence, and as such, conflict is often experienced as a threat to one's survival and well-being, respectively. Enormous amounts of energy and resources are often expended in the attempts to find or create resolution to conflicts, as in the case in the self-authoring mind, or to entirely get rid of conflict, as in commonly found in the socialized mind. For individuals stably functioning from the self-transforming mind, there is an underlying pre-existing conflicting relationship between two or more polar perspectives. These deeper energetic and perspectival relational tensions are prior to the formation of the self. It is the relational discords that then create the selves or parties involved in the conflict. There are two important implications from this larger orientation. First, the fantasy of resolution no longer governs the self's attempts for working with conflict. While working with clients, retreat, and seminar participants, many individuals consumed by the self-authoring mind's attempts to resolve conflict are often relieved to learn that the underlying conflicts they are tirelessly trying to figure out are likely not resolvable. The situation may indeed be able to find some relative resolution. However, the core dynamics of conflict are perhaps unresolvable. I have seen many initially fight this presupposition and then suddenly stop and release. Their body language softens, and often, by embracing the conflict and welcoming it in more fully, they commonly experience less anxiety. They start to experience that perhaps conflict is actually okay. Secondly, the predominant approach to conflict within the self-transforming mind is to allow the conflict to solve you. This is facilitated by a larger ability to regulate and tolerate ambiguity, not knowing, and the accompanying anxiety of trusting and even welcoming conflict. With the larger attunement to and intimacy with conflicting dynamics inherent in the relational flux of experience beyond autonomy, individuals functioning in our honors curriculum welcome being changed, transformed, and organized in a larger functional coherence by a source of stress and challenge that is larger than themselves and in many ways outside of their control. In Keegan's own words, the protracted nature of our conflict suggests not that the other side will not go away, but that it probably should not. The conflict is a likely consequence of one or both of us making prior, true, distinct, and whole our partial position. The conflict is potentially a reminder of our tendency to pretend to completeness when we are in fact incomplete. We may have this conflict because we need it to recover our truer complexity. Conflict is a way to recapture complexity. It can serve as a reminder that we have an ingrained habituation to formulate positions and pretend for them to be complete. In the context of the larger complexity that development can reveal to us, we come to discover how we are in fact quite open, dependent, and in a more unmediated, intimate relationship with more than we are often aware. Keegan's four guidelines for working with conflict with more complexity. 1. Conflict is a signal that you and your opposition have likely become embedded in the oppositional poles inherent in the conflict. 2. The conflict you find yourself in is an expression of your own incompleteness taken as completeness. 3. Value the conflict as an opportunity for you to live out your larger complexity. 4. Focus on ways to allow the conflict to transform the people and parties involved, rather than on the people and parties attempting to resolve the conflict from their presumed distinctness. The novel abilities inherent in intimacy and attunement, in addition to a larger capacity to welcome conflict, often exhibited in individuals functioning from the self-transforming mind, are likely to result in favorable advantages in creativity and innovation. The self-authoring mind largely focuses on problem solving, which can often limit creative output. the presumed distinct and autonomous self is focused on negotiating and establishing a means of getting rid of the problem. This is likely to yield less creative response than the self-transforming mind, which is capable of not just problem solving, but problem finding. Once the autonomous distinct self is confronted with a problem, vast amounts of resources are often myopically deployed to solve it. That is, autonomously functioning individuals want to resolve the problem. Whatever the fastest, most economically feasible option is likely their first choice. This may or may not be the most skillful approach. And perhaps there are more creative options available that are often unseen to the self-authoring mind. The self-transforming mind, in contrast, will continue to look for problems as well as possibly deeper, more systemically entrenched problems rooted in the broader, more influential, interrelated contexts. A surface-level problem rarely consumes an individual's focus and attention when functioning in this higher developmental complexity. They may very well take note and perhaps take decisive action. However, the individual with this greater development is embedded in a process of openly experiencing, searching, and discovering more in the immediacy of unfoldment. This, coupled with the more complex and refined approach to conflict, often yields entirely different scales of creativity. The autonomous and presumably distinct self works diligently at creating resolution while he or she remains in many ways unchanged, while the interpenetrating self at the next level is ensconced in something quite different. Problems, often being symptoms of a lack of complexity, are creative potentiality. The systems, processes, people, and perspectives are all interrelated. The problem or problems are something that ought not to be resolved with an autonomous response. To do so would be to cover up a greater systemic challenge and creative opportunity to the network of systems, processes, people, and perspectives involved. Take note, the people in the system are just as much in consideration for creative transformation as the system itself. This includes the people implementing and managing the change process to work with the problem. Additionally, the self-transforming mind, being larger than and more friendly toward polarities, can actually attune to the creative tension and dissonance happening on larger scales. Instead of only creating a response from a presumed separateness and distinct autonomy, individuals in the honors track of adult development can also allow the problems to co-create and co-construct systemic transformations that are in an ongoing creative dialogue with the underlying tensions. The results often reflect greater creative opportunities. For example, let us pick up a perennial challenge in education: student engagement in the undergraduate and graduate level classroom. The persistent problem is that students lack in classroom engagement. This issue spans from students checking their email and visiting websites during class, nonchalantly browsing their classmates for potential romantic partners, to paying attention but passively taking notes. From this perspective of the self-authoring mind, we have a clear problem and we need to get rid of it. One popular response is to initiate a systemic overhaul to create smart classrooms throughout the educational departments. By infusing a classroom with technology, multimedia capacities, and creative ways to test the recall of students through
push-button remotes, an improvement in student engagement is likely to be yielded. This is one scope of creativity that is a genuinely good innovation. However, as we will see, it is also quite limited. Once the self-authoring mind has reached this point in its own mind, the problem has been adequately addressed, and thus the attention moves to what else is in need of resolution. A highly self-directing achiever may say something to the effect of, "What other challenges are we facing? I can give you a competent, well-thought-out, coherent strategy to solve it by next Monday." And she means it. What is missing is how this challenge can be leveraged to transform our self-directing achiever, who is presumably responsible for solving the problem. Because of her collusion with her own autonomy and distinctness, she presumes to be separate from what is going on in the classrooms. When the classrooms are changed, and the human resources directing our educational institution are left in stasis, creative possibility has been lost. With this loss, we are likely to find a correlating loss in impact on our ongoing problem of student engagement. Additionally, what is missed is an attunement to the larger unresolvability that is entrenched inside of the persistent challenge to harness the attention of youth. The questions, how do we, in the role of a guiding generation, inspire and harness more attention and engagement in our youths to further the quality and impact of their education? How is the challenge of our students' engagement in our classrooms challenging our own culture to grow in new ways? This keeps persisting. There is something here. I'm not sure what, but I sense we are missing something. How are students and our professors co-creating this challenge? What are we as faculty and administrators not wanting to experience? Many of these questions never get posed because these inquiries turn into the larger problems, heighten the experiential dissonance, and most importantly, look into how they themselves are on the transformational stage along with the students and likely the professors. Systemic change to the technological infrastructure may still indeed be needed and skillful, but we are no longer limited to this solution. We are now seeing new possibilities for doing education. Perhaps changes in the way we relate to information as a whole are being asked for. The self-transforming mind may peer into how our students are dulled by fixed, static notions of learning. So, we may need to educate our professors, perhaps grow their minds and their skillfulness in teaching methods to highlight and uncover alive, co-creative explorations into territories of knowledge claims. In order to do this, the administration is required to look at the process of education quite differently. Perhaps we need to cease to be limited by the notion of providing access to information and also include access to more dynamic ways to hold and relate to information, as well as how to educate students to generate new knowledge claims themselves. If you are starting to feel overwhelmed by the vastness of these inquiries, you are likely starting to get a taste of why a continual rediscovery of complexity is required. Also, a need for divergent perspectives and values from a spectrum of individuals connected to this problem is an essential resource, from student input to faculty training and the administration's supports. All of these provide dynamic perspectives on a problem that is itself changing moment to moment and student to student. the distinct and autonomous mind plays in a landscape that is much simpler. Yet, to yield the larger creativity available, our professors and administrators require a mind that is rooted in an interpenetrating subjectivity. This problem, if it is to be worked with and not simply solved, requires an ongoing initiative to genuinely pick up this problem in the classroom and allow its dissonance to develop the systems, processes, people, and perspectives involved. To do so might yield an elegant approach and may lead to a greater creative response serving more elegance in education and our growing youth.
In summary, the self-transforming mind has an identity and subjectivity that is interpenetrating. This seed of the self is located outside of polarities. We will explore this in greater detail later. However, an additional perspective on the location of the self is that when you inhabit the self-transforming mind, you are inside of an immensely unitive or integrative space. The substance of you can be thought of as a dialectical co-creative relatedness. At this stage, you are a human being that embraces polarity, is co-creative, as well as internally creative, and you are made up of a substance that is highly relational. In terms of functionality, we have covered an impressive scope. The self-transforming mind yields a larger culture of intimacy in response to the loneliness that often accompanies this growth of mind. There is an active and conscious refusal to consolidate a self that is whole, complete, and distinct. The self is larger than many polarities, regularly growing beyond dichotomies, often as soon as they are identified. As such, this self resists formulating a self that is inside of polarity, creating an oppositional stance toward one. The primacy of relational flux, as we have discussed, yields a new set of skills for exploring co-creative, flexible, and dynamic boundaries. Finally, we get greater attunement, greater skillfulness working with conflict, and a greater scope of creativity. All this points towards the central organizing thesis of this book. Our higher stages of complexity can yield greater elegance in the world. Self-transforming mind. Identity. The interpenetrating self, or interpenetrability of self systems. Location. Outside of polarity. Inside of unitive, integrative space. Substance. Dialectical, co-creative relatedness. Functionality, enhanced intimacy, dynamic co-creative boundaries, spontaneous attunement, conflict, trust, and broader scopes of creativity. Exercises to reveal your self-transforming mind. The following questions help you reveal emergent and already established areas of functioning from the self-transforming mind stage of development. Closely inspect your experience as you reflect on these inquiries and use the personal notes and reflection section to capture key insights. The self-transforming mind. Discovery practice. Practice rediscovering who you are in the present moment, rather than relying on your self-perception as something fixed and historically defined in your interactions today, including your work tasks. Consider whether you are more interested in discovering who you are in the present moment rather than knowing yourself as a separate fixed self that is historically defined. How does this practice of discovery impact the vividness of your experience moment to moment. What did you notice when undertaking this exercise? If you habitually define yourself based on historical events and facts about yourself and your experience, what are those traits and qualities? Reflect on why you may or may not be attached to a particular form of self-identity. Consider a time when you allowed yourself to be formed without the need for control by the ongoing flux of experience. How would you describe this experience? Consider your relationship to conflict. Identify a time when you were in conflict and were able to inherently trust the process of conflict rather than attempting to fix something. How do you or can you allow yourself to be transformed by conflict instead of solving the conflict from your autonomy? Conflict practice. In your next conflict, allow conflict to transform and change you. Practice trusting conflict as a gesture of growth and pay close attention to the experience.